The next show.
Let's get down to business.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open technology, and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 2.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Talk about disappointment.
May 21st, 2008.
What is the disappointment, Dan?
I go in to grab another Rolling Rock out of the fridge, right? So I crack it open and I take a swig and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. This is not Rolling Rock. It's ginger ale. So I hand it to my wife and I say, you know, you've been dying to have one of these again, so here you go. So I grab another one out of the fridge and I crack it open and I sit down and I take a swig and I'm like, wait a minute. It's not Rolling Rock. It's another ginger ale.
What did you get for buying Rolling Rock in the first place?
Oh, shut up. Hey, honey. Did you buy more ginger ale? Because I just cracked one open, too. I thought you drank it all.
You cracked another one open?
Mm-hmm.
No, she was taking the Rolling Rock to work and leaving you with the ginger ale.
Somebody secretly replaced all my Rolling Rock with ginger ale.
Read the bottle. That's not my fault.
Well, I didn't think we had any more. Sorry.
So we're doing video here. There's a stick cam. We got a room set up. I see Dan's mug sucking down a beer, and I see Alan sitting there.
That's a ginger ale, pal.
Yes, sorry.
I got to get my video camera working.
Alan, you were questioning about how I got the iCam working.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a FireWire device. It was a real big pain in the ass to get working. I had it plugged in, and this was back when we were using the... we were using Crocs, weren't we?
I don't remember what we're using. I remember it was overheating all the time. I know that much, but
it would overheat. It never really worked right. We were doing it to take snapshots, so we didn't have like constant video going. We take a snapshot and upload it to that page that we had going on there for a while. That would just, but you know what? It was just using the standard video for Linux, or was it FireWire? That's a FireWire device, isn't it?
It's a FireWire, yeah.
Yeah, it was using DV Grab. That's what I was using. I was using it as a FireWire camera and using, I think it was DV Grab or something similar to that, just to grab a single image, because and then it would take the image and upload it. I wasn't really using it as a webcam.
Okay. Well, I got another old webcam somewhere in the closet somewhere, but unfortunately it was this IBM one, which was really nice as long as you only run it under Windows. On it, but you know, it's old now, and it never quite worked. I got it to do like black and white images, but it never actually worked in like color. And I don't know, maybe the drivers have been improved since then. It's distracting.
It is, isn't it? But you know,
so
what?
I'm gonna have to find some kind of camera that I can attach to this stuff, right?
I need to figure out a way to, like, push my camera back or something. Because, like, I'm like, all you see is my head. And it's awful. I wish there was a way that I can,
get a little booger there on the left there, dude, you know.
Does that make you feel better, Dan? So I have a light on mine.
Yeah, I have a light on mine, too, but mine's awfully... I think it's just this damn stick cam. I wish I could increase the size of this window.
It doesn't seem to let you do that, does it?
I don't know.
Mine only comes up with a little X if I try to do anything there. Well, anyways, what else do we have to talk about?
this flag will laugh at us. I like this will flag the members' live stream as offensive. That's great. That's what you need. What's this do? Oh, that's a little monitor on the side.
And we are not offensive, I don't think.
Yet.
Yeah, give us time.
What's all this stuff over here? It's just such a big window that I can't, you know, on the AAA, everything doesn't fit on here. But that's the way, I don't care. If you have a camera, join on in, people.
Yeah, pop into the chat room if you've got one.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Although I don't know that if, I know this stuff will come out over the stream that we're talking on because it's picking up the asterisk stream. I don't know if people pop in, will it do that?
If people pop in, we're not going to hear it on the recording. I'm not going to hear it. I have my volume muted, so I don't hear what's coming over that.
Here we go.
Max Steve.
Who's that?
It's Max Steve.
Oh, man.
I don't know that his audio is going
to
come in.
Turn that off, Max Steve. We don't need to see our creepy listener. You know what? Actually, we probably could pipe the audio out of here right into the mixer, too. It's a thought to
probably
think about.
Yeah, but right now it's right now the way that it's set up is it's just picking up the stuff that's already going through the mixer, which what I normally record the stream with. So I'd have to play around with it.
It's dark over there, Steve.
I'm not talking about you, Alan. I'm talking about me. I could pump the audio out of my AAA into something.
Oh yeah, if you want to.
It's about you.
Well, I have to turn off the audio on my end, though. Because otherwise you'll get that lovely echo. Echo.
So, now, what camera are you using, Alan?
I have the that old EyeSight, the portable one.
Where did Max Steve go?
Yeah.
Oh, there he is.
Bounce. Which is a really nice camera, but unfortunately it really only works with a Mac.
Should I flag Steve as offensive? He's a little too close to the camera. He's offending me.
He's staring at us.
I just see his forehead. Like, I see his forehead, I see Alan in profile, and then I see, like, two-thirds of my head. Except it's the bad two-thirds. You actually want to see this.
The bad two-thirds.
You just want to see this. So, before Alan was like this, this is what you saw for Alan. Alan was like this. What's the point? What's the point?
Well, like I said, the camera I only have the little stand for the camera, so.
Wow, Alan, yours just freaked out there a second. Steve's got one of those things going on. He looks like he's like the lost guy, like he's in the Antarctica. We're sitting here talking to each other. We're like, no, Steve, hold on. We'll send somebody down to get you. Just hold in there, Steve. Hold on. And then like a few minutes later, it goes blank and he's dead. So when we finally get down there, all there is just, like, his body but no head and frozen blood everywhere.
Don't touch my skin. That's nice, Dan.
That's how the movie starts.
I can't record that.
Our new recording company, Mars Media, starts. Because we're one planet closer.
One planet closer. Oh, you damn it.
No. Has anybody listened to anything aside from the Linux Action Show on Jupiter Media?
There hasn't been anything.
That other show they do. Yet,
not Casta Blasta.
Casta Blasta?
Radio Revolver or the detective show? No? Okay, let's move on then. I don't know. I'm kind of creeped out by Steve staring at me. Look at him there. So I'm like looking at him, looking at me, and Alan's just smiling. Alan's just got
He looks like a serial killer.
Alan.
What bothers me about Alan is you can't see his hands. You never know what he's doing when he's smiling at you like that. You know.
Like Steve just keeps going in and out, and Alan's just like, I don't know. I can't tell whether it's Alan or a picture. It's like the Tim McGraw cutout, but it's Alan.
I could have put the Speed Racer cutout I have up.
There you go.
Yeah, yours is really choppy, Alan. What's going on there?
I don't know. Maybe it's probably, like I said, it's because I'm on the Mac Mini. I'm recording the show as well as doing this at the same time. Honestly, that's probably why. I think if we were going to do this seriously, I'd have to bring up the other Mac if I was going to buy another camera.
Steve, wave at the camera.
As somebody tells me a really good camera for that works in Linux, then we'll buy that.
Steve, wave at the camera.
You can't see how much lag there is or something?
Yeah, I just want to see, yeah. There wasn't really any lag when Alan said he was going to hold up that. Okay, there we go.
There you go.
For a second there, I was going to get worried that maybe either Steve doesn't hear us or maybe Steve is on the special bus or... nah, I'm just kidding, Steve. Steve looks like a great guy.
He's on the short bus.
Yeah. Now, why is it Steve? Steve looks great. You know, he must be in the dark. I can't tell where his headphones end and his
we couldn't
his
tell
facial
where his hands
hair
are either.
His facial hair begins.
And insulting our listeners.
No, I'm not trying to. And then Alan.
So what did you do on the show tonight? Well, we insulted listeners.
And Alan just like his picture doesn't move at all until like there's all of a sudden a flurry of motion. And it blips
really?
Out.
Is it that bad?
It can. Look at me looking at Steve
I don't
looking
think
at me.
It's the fact that Alan's picture doesn't move. It's just that Alan doesn't move.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to get up in tap pants for y'all.
You should.
Oh, come on.
Not like in my camera.
This is kind of asinine. Maybe, we've spent like 20 minutes on this already.
If we were going to do this, maybe we should have like talked about it like the day before.
For you. Well, it was a last minute thing on my part. I didn't think I was going to be this involved.
You know, actually, the reason why we're on this right now probably is because Alan actually IM'd me the other day. And he's like,
yes.
He's like,
unfortunately,
get on?
He kept kicking me off, but.
Can you get on and pick your nose for me? I was like, Alan, was that you? He's like, shh. Just send me our video. Send it. Perv.
Yeah, well. I do something. I was bored at work.
Dun, dun, dun. Should we start talking about some stuff?
Why not?
Sure, why not?
Where's our guest tonight?
Missing in action, it appears. So we got a guest, another guest filling in. We got Link Fezzenden. Link, welcome to the show.
Alan's our guest tonight.
Dun, 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 dun. The video is our guest tonight.
Mac Steve JB. I'm wondering, Mac Steve JB, are you on a Mac using OS 10 right now? If you are, give me the thumbs up sign like this. Delay. Oh, he is on a Mac. Or unless he's just imitating me. No, now he's waving. No, just the thumbs up. Just the thumbs up. All right, give me two fingers up. Two fingers up if you're on a Mac. Two fingers up if you're on a Mac.
Can't wait for the delay.
No, I see your elbow, not your fingers. No, he's got a thumbs down. Okay, so you're not on a Mac. Give me three fingers up if you're on Linux. Are you on Linux? Three fingers up. Three fingers up. Oh, that means you must be on Windows. Are you on Windows? If you're on Windows, turn off your camera. You must be on Windows. Oh, no. Okay, he's on Linux. That's good. Okay. All right. He threw me there. There's a buckaroo, too, who I don't know what buckaroo just left. Anyway, all right, let's get into the show.
No, he didn't. He's still on.
Oh, he's back on, but his video's off. I don't even know if he has any video. If you're trying to join and want to speak, I'm not going to hear you. Alan might. I don't think Alan's even going to hear you.
No, actually, none of us will hear him at this point.
All right. Okay.
Unless like I said, I think if you unmute yourself, you will, but then we'll get this terrible echo.
Sometimes I like to kiss the microphone.
Steve says Linux there.
Sometimes he likes to swallow it.
I take it that Steve is probably in the chat room.
Yeah.
Oh, Bookaroo. Pat, why don't you speak of something? Let me tell Bookaroo how to get on with the EEEPC.
What's that?
Why don't you speak about something, or somebody speak about something, and I'll tell people how to get on with the EEEPC.
Sure. No,
can you hear
problem.
Me over there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I
fine.
Hear you,
we, can,
yeah.
we can hear you.
Okay.
I got an article for you. I saw this article. It says that Microsoft Office 2007 to support ODF and not OOXML. Let me post the article so everybody can read along. Basically, it says that Microsoft is going to release an update to Office 2007, and it will support ODF 1.1, but it's not going to support its own OOXML format, and it's also going to support PDF 1.1. So whether or not this is true or not remains to be seen, but for now it sounds like they're going to support ODF, which is a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, if it comes through, it will be, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully it works out, and people with OpenOffice will be able to use the ODF format, which is a good format. I don't know why people are bagging on it recently. Lately it seems like certain Linux projects are getting bashed on by people. You know, wow, 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 you know?
I guess I haven't noticed that myself, but...
Well, OLPC, man, I don't know.
Well,
that project's
yeah.
gone down the shitter pretty fast.
Well, that's because they're going to switch it over to Windows, that's why. That's
yeah,
a sad thing there, but... Very sad, but... They bought them out, what can you say?
Life goes on, obla-di, obla-da.
Hey, that should be a song.
I'm looking at this thick end. A lot of these people have, like, you know, these kooky pictures and images of themselves. A lot of young kids on here.
I haven't played around with it. I logged in on it a long time ago to see what it was. And then, like I said, this is the first time I've actually even played on it.
I wonder if a regular digital camera will let you stream it. Curious.
Don't know. I guess it's just, you know, you have to be able to be recognized by the flash, the flash thing.
Yeah.
I know mine
yeah,
always
that
pops
means
up.
That you have to have the camera, you have to have the video running on the actual machine. I don't think you can import video from somewhere else and then, you know, stuff it through.
Because mine comes up with the choices of IIDC Firewire video, DV video, and USB video class video.
How do you get
choices. That? If you right-click on the window, when the flash player is there.
You go live?
When I hit the live portion of it, yeah. You go say go live, and then when the window pops up, if you right-click on it, you get settings for Macromedia Flash.
All right, for those of you who have an EEEE PC, if you're interested in doing this, I just posted a link to a website, http://GJennyGirl, I don't know what it is, GENNIEGIRL.com/2008/05/EEEPC-CAM-FIX. What that is if you read through there, there's a file to download that will create a loopback device for the video camera. Then it'll turn the camera on and everything, load the necessary modules, turn the camera on, and then when you go and you click on like stick cam or publish to directly to YouTube through their flash recorder or player, it'll ask you, you know, to enable the camera and then allow you to choose it. It'll say video for Linux device, or underneath that, it should be a drop-down option. It should say video loopback device. You click on that, and you should be able to see yourself and record whatever you want to. That's how I've done the YouTube videos. That's how I'm on stick cam right now. It took a couple of seconds for me to set up. Now, if you download that software, it's made to be run out of your home directory, but I installed mine on my flash card, so I had to just change some paths in the VL. The vlback.sh file is the only one I run. I changed some paths in there to point to where the actual software was installed. It's really simple. It should only take you like 5 minutes at the most to be able to get that up, and then you could just be on and chatting with us if you have the Triple EPC. And I'm not sure if something similar like that would work with other devices that allow you to get like a video for a Linux device but might not be recognized by Flash. The camera on the Triple EPC is a Video for Linux 2 device, which is not yet supported by Flash. So that's hence the need for the loopback. And it works pretty well.
Hmm.
And that, cool, my friends, is how you do it. And I don't understand why... Oh, Jeannie. It's Jeannie, not Jenny. Ah. I was criticized by Hellmark, who made me sad.
Try again, Dan.
Criticized by Hellmark, who made me sad. Jeannie girl. And that's girl with a girl.
I think I broke my thumb.
I'm going to keep it out of your ass.
Yeah. How did you break your thumb?
It hurts really bad, and it's turned black and blue. Right before we all got online here, I came out in the living room to get ready to get on the show, and one of my cats, my really old cat, was like hurriedly eating out of my wife's bowl that she had left on the table for dinner. So I went over to like smack him and get him out of the way, and he turned just at the right time, and he's like, he's really old, so he's all bones now. And I caught him just on the corner of the knuckle on my thumb. And it hurt like hell, man. Now it's turning all black and blue. I wonder if I cracked something.
Yikes.
You break something on the cat first.
Yeah, well, he didn't even notice. You know? It's like if you hit somebody on their, you know, elbow or something like that, like it kills you and they don't even know.
Yeah, they don't even notice. Yeah,
but it's turning black and blue, and that really sucks because that's how I make my living with my fingers, and gotta kind of be careful about that crap. I blame it on Dan.
What'd you say?
I said I blame it on Dan.
Yeah, that is the normal thing to do.
He's a good scapegoat. Works well that way.
Blame Dan.
If you gotta blame somebody,
I'll figure out how to get this, you know, this camera thing working with my video stream on my webcam. That would be cool, but I don't think I'm gonna be able to do it. Bummer.
Like I said, I'm sure I could probably get this working if I had some time to do it.
All right, Pat, you were talking about... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alan.
No, go ahead.
You were talking about... I think you mentioned the OLPC there, didn't you?
Yeah, it seems like certain projects are just being bashed on by everybody, including OLPC. You know, with the whole fiasco with them, you know, putting Windows XP in their machines. I don't know. It just seems like a lot of different projects are just getting hammered to people, in the press especially.
Now, is the OLPC project getting hammered, in your opinion, or are they hammering something?
OLPC's getting hammered, along with some other projects, too.
Well, you guys, we got to play with the OLPC at OLF last year, right? I mean, what were your impressions of that?
I thought it was pretty cool.
It was a cool little device for what it was, you know?
What'd you think of the Sugar interface?
For me, it wasn't all that intuitive, but I'm not a person who's never used a computer before. So, I guess, you know, people that have experiences using, you know, computers, it's a little different perspective than somebody coming from, you know, who's never picked up a computer or used one ever, you know?
Yeah, I it's hard for me to judge the OLPC sugar interface because I'm already tainted by the uses of computers. It's a tough...
Dan is tainted. There you have it, folks.
Yes.
Dan is tainted.
It's a really, you know, I've heard a lot of people, a lot of pundits, complain about the sugar interface because it's, you know, primarily it's something they're not familiar with. And they're more accustomed to the Windows side of things. And what we've heard, I mean, what I've read about it in press reviews has been that the people who are buying these, who are, you know, government officials, educators and stuff like this, for use in their countries, are using computers and probably using Windows. So the interface to them is a bit alien and what they're not accustomed to. Therefore, they're already predestined to dislike the interface because they're not familiar with it, you know. And I think that little bit of bias there really, really hurts the potential legitimacy as to whether or not the sugar interface is a better interface to learn than, you know, the more familiar Windows interface. Not to say that, you know, I for one don't think the Windows interface is that great, but it's the most familiar. So, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. And therefore it also has bred contempt for anything else. I mean, people laud the OS X interface and how wonderful that is and how usable. But, you know, from my experience of deploying OS X to a bunch of Windows users, a significant portion of them dislike the interface because it's different. It's not what they're accustomed to. It's not what they're familiar to. So they're going to dislike it, you know, right from the get-go. Those who give it a chance, who learn on it, not to say, you know, some of them like it better than, you know, what they're used to on Windows. Others don't. They prefer the standard Windows way of doing things. That's what they're accustomed to. So you have that hill to climb, which is unfortunate. And it's lauded as one of the reasons why the, quote, OLPC is supposedly failing. I don't really know if it is. Is it? Where's the crickets?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't have the crickets loaded.
So I ask you guys, have you heard whether or not the OLPC is failing?
I don't think it's doing as well as what people thought it would do, you know?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't think it's living up to its potential. But I don't know. Like I said, I didn't play around with that one when we were at OLC.
Hasn't there been gigantic orders for it in other countries, though? Like, my point is, what are we comparing its success to if, you know, in Nambia or something like that, they have a million of them floating around and we haven't seen a whole lot here? Does that mean it's successful or not successful?
Yeah, we haven't really heard about that.
I don't know. I mean, one of the other things that...
I think if the OLPC gets out to some of its intended audience, which really is disadvantaged children in one manner or another, right? As long as it gets out to its intended audience and helps anyone, then the project has been a success from that standpoint. I don't know about, you know, if they're making money on it or something like that. I really don't care either. But as long as it gets out to some kids and helps the kids out and they learn a little something and, you know, even better, they learn a little something and they're using Linux to do it. I think it's a wild success, sure.
Well, according to JZA, three countries are on board, Peru, Libya, and Nigeria. Well, and the other side of this, too, one of the other things that the project has proposed in the usage of open source and free software is that it would give the kids not only the ability to use these applications, but to learn how they're developed and to develop their own applications. And that has been contested as very unlikely, so to speak. Very unlikely on one hand, in that by providing them with windows, it not only gives them an environment that they're going to be more accustomed to when they go into the workplace, but there are equal ways for them to pursue development projects on Windows, which gives them the added advantage of, number one, developing for the most widely deployed platform, and number two, taking advantage of all the development and educational software that is provided for the most widely used platform. Opinions on that? Those points? I mean, is it a pipe dream that we would expect kids, a significant portion of the kids that would get these computers, to actually go into figuring out how these applications run, how to develop their own applications? You guys have any opinions on that? You just want to play the crickets? Am I talking to myself? Did my machine lock up? Are you guys still there? Hello? That doesn't sound good. Anybody still there? I think I lost everybody. Hello? Hello? Yeah, well, hold on. We're on a pause a second here until I figure out what happened. Something ugly seemed to have happened. I don't know what happened. I'm going to... I'm going to find something. I don't know. Okay.
That Linux guy that's running Windows on his freaking router over there.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know where you guys heard of what I was saying, but essentially what the question that I had asked regarding another point made by the contractors of the OLPC project and its use of free and open source software. Originally, one of the propositions for running FOSS software on the OLPC was that it would give the children the capability of not only being able to run applications, but to be able to look at how applications are designed, to be able to see how the programs are actually created, and to be able to program the applications themselves. Now, the pundits have said that, number one, it's kind of a fallacy to think that the majority of these children using these OLPCs are going to actually take advantage of the capabilities of looking at the source code, let alone program their own applications. And what's more, by using Windows, which is a more, quote, familiar environment, it also takes advantage of having the majority of the install base out there and the number one used platform, so that any benefits that may be garnered by those few people who use or take advantage of the source code of the software would be far outweighed by the fact that people would be better prepared for jobs in the future by using a more widely deployed platform, would be able to take advantage of far more educational software that's available for the most widely deployed platform, and as they have a whole host of their own development tools that they could start to use to learn how to program via the OLPC or via the programming languages available and tools on Windows. What's your guys' opinions of that? Those retorts to the claims that the way to go on this is FOSS software?
Sounds like FUD from Microsoft.
Yep.
So why? I mean, any further opinion other than it being FUD from Microsoft?
Well, I to quote one of my favorite people, I believe that whoever stated that is confusing the question. And the reason I believe that is because, actually, there's a number of really good reasons. One, the vast majority of the OLPC installations, and by that I mean, you know, where they're actually trying to market that particular computer, is in countries that are you know, not as well off as the United States. And a lot of these countries, either people do not have access to a computer, number one, to have any idea what the hell Microsoft is. And or number two, a lot of the countries that it's working with right now, like Brazil and stuff like that, they're really, really pushing for it. It's a big open source market there. You know, like the government is going for Linux and things like that. So I think that whole argument, like, oh well, you know, they're not gonna glean anything unless they use Microsoft, is really a moot point, because there is not a big Microsoft presence there to begin with. So it's just more FUD from Microsoft. I mean, obviously. And then the argument that you know, somehow just because you give a computer to these kids that they're not going to be able to use Microsoft if they wanted to when they get older is ridiculous, because you know, they're just kids. It's just an introduction to them of computers and things like that. And you know, we as free and open source people know that obviously Microsoft usage does not contain the corner of the market on how intelligent computer use is. In fact, I think it's probably quite the opposite. People who grow up using Microsoft can only use Microsoft. People who grow up understanding, you know, some different things and basic computer theory can apply that anywhere. You know, you run into people like that all the time at work where, like, somebody can only use Microsoft Excel and gets completely lost on any other spreadsheet, you know, as opposed to someone who actually learned spreadsheets and can use any
spreadsheet. Learn how to use
spreadsheet.
You use a word processor as opposed to just Word.
Right. Precisely. And I think that the OLPC is going to afford that sort of a learning experience. Maybe not even that. I mean, it's just, you know, it's not a giant technological, you know, machine that they're getting. This is pretty much something that they can get an introduction to computer use on, and have some fun. You know, they're not gonna. It's not like they're.
You know, it's
a $900 laptop. They can do whatever the hell they want with it. It only has a few functions, but it's enough to give people an introduction, and you know, they can go from there.
It's hard to argue against the value of that open source affords with being able to program. Now, I know, in growing up and using, you know, the TI-99/4A, and I'm sure the same thing with the Commodore, I found it a lot more approachable with learning how to program on that. It seemed that you basically got these computers, and other than buying software, you had to program it, and there wasn't a lot of software out there to begin with, not like there is today. And it was even more conducive, I felt, to being able to program, which I took advantage of that. It was a lot easier for me to sit down and start programming on the TI-99/4A than it was for me to sit down and start programming under DOS or Windows when I was using those. I mean, it was presented like hand in hand. Here's the computer. Here's some software you can run. Here's some stuff that you can do and tools that you can do to create your own programs. And, you know, I took advantage of that. some other guy on there now. But, you know, once I got into Windows and other things like that, to be able to do the same kind of stuff that I did on the TI-99/4A was not as approachable. Therefore, I wonder, you know, and it's hard for me to denounce the value of that because, you know, that's what I grew up doing, playing around, programming, stupid things like that. So, you know, it's hard for me to say that I think that that's a fallacy that people would do that because I know there would be kids that would take advantage of it. And that's the prime audience right there. You know, you get the kids young enough playing with the technology, I think a significant portion of them are going to try and do their own thing with it. It's only natural. You give kids Legos, and they come, you know, you go out and buy Legos. How many people just stuck with building, building the Lego sets that they got by following the directions? You might follow directions to build the first couple of things, and that's cool. Then you tear it apart and you build your own thing. You know, that was the fun of it. I mean, here you are given a system that you could pretty much do anything with. And it's such an advantage. You know, and not only is it an advantage to the kids, but it's also an advantage to the educators, to the people in that country, that being able to develop for the OLPC, it's a Fedora platform, to be able to, you know, develop the software for there allows them to easily create their own applications for the kids to run, to create their own self-sustaining software environment that they're not dependent upon any single company to be able to, you know, provide software or quality software. They can do it themselves, and it's in their language. That's one of the things that I think about when I think about, you know, when I hear people complaining about, you know, who's going to actually program on these. I think there'd be a lot of kids that would. Now, of course, there'd be a lot of kids that would, you know, that they would just use it for what's there.
A lot of fond memories as a kid with just getting, like, computer magazines and typing in the programs manually and debugging them.
I think out of all the magazines, I used to buy those magazines all the time. And I think I would get like maybe one out of every five that I'd actually type correctly. I enjoyed doing it, but I just was such a lousy typer. I could never get them right.
You know, another criticism I've heard leveled at this is the cost factor, where people will say, oh, you know, yeah, sure, Linux might be free. Fedora would be free. The Sugar interface might be free. But let's face it, in these countries that the OLPC is targeted for, Windows is essentially for free, too, because everybody's running a pirated version. And it's almost like, you know, that is a valid criticism against the OLPC and a reason why it should run Windows because, well, they're already running it by pirating it. So therefore, we should run the OLPC because that's okay. Everybody's pirating. It's almost like that's a justification, and it's a good thing that they're pirating it. And, you know, on one hand, Microsoft says, well, we're going to prevent you from ever pirating this. We want to stop that. But look, they're already pirating it, so let's give them the software that they want. But we're going to lock it up. The sick thing about it is no one ever just comes out and really says, you know, here we are. It's the drug dealer philosophy again. We're going to give you the first taste for free. And then we're going to screw you down the road.
That's right.
You're going to become dependent upon us. And we're going to jack you up, the price
just
and everything.
Just like a junkie.
Mm-hmm. A Microsoft junkie.
But what I think is really what I believe here, and I see this with the OLPC, I see this with the Tripoli PC. What's interesting is what is leading the race on all this is FOSS, is Linux, is the free and open source software. We are leading the race on that. And that's important because it's not Linux It's not Foss playing catch-up. It's them blazing the trail ahead. Here we are. We have Microsoft now is not innovating here. They are actually having to take steps backwards to catch up on where the industry is going.
I mean, because Foss has such a huge advantage in the fact that, I mean, look at the size of our programming base. You know what I mean? Our community base that can do that sort of thing or you know, are accomplished getting the correct set of applications done for this thing. We have so much more, or so many more resources in that department than Microsoft does. And they've got a giant set of resources, and they're all on the payroll, but, you know.
They're all on the payroll.
That's the thing. These guys are on the payroll.
We've got people working.
They go home and relax, and, you know, the open source guys, when they're done with their jobs for the day, they go home and relax by programming open source stuff, you know.
Say doing their own project.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I just find it hilarious that they have spent all that time and developer money and you know, bringing to the market their latest and greatest and most awesomest and securest operating system ever, and yet what's in the news? What are they doing? They're backpedaling to XP to provide more life. They're stripping out parts of XP so that it runs on these low-end systems. I mean, they're really, like, they're just tearing apart their infrastructure, their operating system, so that it can, you know, try and be as flexible as possible. And what is it? You know, you kick open the doors with Linux, you get it out there, people are loving these devices, and then, you know, Microsoft muscles its way in there and says, well, what about us? Here, use this too. You know you want it. This is what they want. And, you know, these things are selling like hotcakes, and here's Microsoft is coming in playing catch-up, which is great. Now, what I'm really curious to see, I'm really burning to know, is if the OLPC, I mean, Triple EPC is selling like hotcakes. You got hundreds of thousands of OLPCs going out there. You got all these other UMPCs going out with Linux installed. I would expect to see the install base of Linux and its market share to increase. I can't really see that it's going to stay down there at the 1% or 2%. In the next year or so. I mean, I find that hard to believe, or maybe I'm just misguided. I mean, what do you guys think?
Not really sure, because I haven't thought about it.
But you suck, Alan.
Well, I'm sorry. My mind is elsewhere right now.
I mean,
I
don't
know.
You
must have found the website with all the hot anime chicks with magical powers and purple hair.
Blue
hair.
But no.
Blue hair, big
no, my mind is just wandering. But go right on.
So, I mean, I don't know. You guys think we're going to see, you know, a significant increase in the adoption of, you know, desktop numbers, the adoption numbers in Linux? I mean, is it going to eat into a little bit of that market share of Microsoft or take away some of the market share of Apple?
I think that Linux has for years been eating away at the market share for Windows. I don't know about Apple, but definitely for Windows. And I think it's at the point now where, you know, and it's been getting that way for a long time, that you know, the thorn in Microsoft's side has been getting more and more painful. But now I think it's getting, like, painful and infected. And they're starting to pay a little bit more attention, specifically in the, you know, the smaller and embedded devices, you know, and the small laptop devices like the OLPC, you know, the Triple EPC and stuff like that. Microsoft is finding out that Linux really is the world, I guess, is deciding, the manufacturers deciding that Linux is a better fit because it's so much more flexible. And, you know, Microsoft is the proverbial 10-pound bag of shit that you're trying to, you know, you're trying to stuff into a 5-pound bag. And it's much more difficult to do that. And that's why they're going through all these pains where they're trying to backpedal and chop stuff out of their older operating systems and make little, you know, make new embedded kind of operating systems that they can shoehorn into place, where Linux really doesn't do that because we can come up with that really fast and easy.
So in
I think, you know.
So in your opinion, are we going to see an increase in those numbers, you think, in the next year or two? Or are we still going to be playing the 1% or 2%? Or do you think those numbers are superfluous and arbitrary and probably are not a reflection of accurate statistics?
I think it's going to be the 1% or 2% thing, but I think it's going to be 1% or 2%, you know, 1% or 2% increase as things go along. You know what I mean? And any time you take even a percentage away from Microsoft, they're going to feel the pain. You know what I mean? And because, you know, not only are they losing market share to more people who are moving from Windows to Mac OS X, but they're also losing people to, you know, large Linux installs and businesses in different countries and stuff like that. And every little bit hurts, and then you compound it with this whole business about, you know, Linux sort of ruling the roost with the embedded computing market, and the fact that their newest operating system, Vista, is just bombed completely.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're doing a whole lot of backpedaling there, and I'm sure that's, you know, I'm sure that's hurt them, and I'm sure there's a lot of finger pointing going on and a lot of scrambling. In their case, it's, you know, things are coming to a little bit more of a head than they have been in previous years. I'm happy to see it, though, you know. There's nothing wrong with breeding a little bit of industry competition, I guess.
That would be nice.
That works.
Yeah.
I'd like to see more market share so that we can see more applications being developed. And more adoption to increase more application. It's you know, I'm really glad Asus seems to be really plowing ahead with Asus and Nokia are two big names that come out of hardware development manufacturers that are just like really taking advantage of Linux and open source. And I look forward to seeing more from them. You know, with Dell on board and IBM, just the demand from hardware manufacturers to produce peripherals that are supported under Linux is increased, and it's great to see that bit of muscle behind there. I like that, and that's some good stuff. But I'm excited. I'm not going to go so far as to claim that, you know, we're going to see 2009 or 2008 is going to be the year of the Linux desktop. I don't think somebody's ever going to predict that X, Y, and Z is going to be the year of the Linux desktop. I think it's going to be more of a hindsight thing where we're going to look back and say, wow, that's when it really took off, you know, and
well, they keep saying every year is the year of the desktop. I mean, it's like every single year they say that.
But, well, that's true.
It's getting
a little
tiresome, actually.
But when you
look, it's been the year of the Linux desktop for me for like 10 years.
Yeah. But when you look back, though, I mean, you look back at the past. We've been progressing, and it's been like a gradual progress. But it's been, you know, it's been kind of incremental. I mean, you're taking these steps, and they just keep building on it and building. It's more and more momentum, and it's exciting. It's sometimes it's difficult to say, why can't we just rush forward, rush ahead? But the way that it's progressing is slow and steady, and there's not a lot of backpedaling. You know, once it's established, it just keeps going, you know?
Yep, once it's set, it keeps that territory and moves along. I mean, most notably that, you know, the things that I'm seeing now are people who are heavily entrenched in Windows use, administrators and stuff like that I know, are coming up to me and, you know, mentioning to me that they really need to start improving their Linux skills. And, you know, they're asking me questions about Linux and how do I get Linux installed on this or that, and how do I do this or that under Linux, and, oh, I just, you know, I did an install in a VM or on my spare laptop or something like that. And I noticed a lot of that.
Beating it into them, now. Huh?
No. It's been a zero advocacy thing. I mean, well, not zero, because I really do tend to pick on Microsoft people when their stuff breaks. You know, like someone's desktop will go down and I'll look at them and say, mine's running just fine. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. But, I mean, just people that I know, you know, from work and stuff like that, that are coming up to me now and saying that they're really trying to obtain a better knowledge of better working knowledge of Linux, or they feel that now is the time that they need to start learning that for whatever reason. But I just noticed that there's an increasing frequency of that. You know what I mean?
Well, I know at work we replaced most of the Sun boxes with Linux boxes now. At least all the desktop ones that were around are all Linux boxes now, which a couple of years ago would have been unheard of, actually.
All dead rat stuff, right?
I notice now at where I work, a lot of the Unix people are starting to get into Linux, and also the Windows people who are sick and tired of Vista, they've got new machines and they see what Vista is, and the realization comes to them that Vista sucks, basically, and they want something else.
Not according to Twit.
Not according to Microsoft.
According to Twit, Vista is getting better all the time. Am I missing something?
Neil Laporte says that.
Am I missing?
Yeah, I think they're missing something, man, because that's not what I keep hearing from everybody that's actually using it, you know. What I keep hearing is that people are you know, switching to Linux by themselves.
I hear slow, bloated.
Or they're going back to, at the very least, they're going back to XP, you know what I mean?
XP, yeah.
So you think Microsoft is going to stick to its guns and discontinue XP? Did they do it already? No. They pushed.
Oh, no, Microsoft will never discontinue XP until they have, you know, they're going to need another rendition or two of Windows.
I mean, they said they're not going to sell it or support it. They're not going to sell it anymore, but I think support goes till 2010 or 15.
Yeah.
But they're not going to sell it anymore.
They're going to support it for a good... Well, they are still selling it. I thought they renegotiated their contract with some, like Dell and stuff like that, so that they could distribute stuff with XP on it.
I thought... I was under the impression that in June... Was it June that they're supposed... That's when the contract runs out. But they've extended it for UMPC, Ultra Portable Mobile
Computers.
The real small
stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't know.
We shall see. We shall see. But, you know...
You better run out and get a copy now while you can.
That's it. But it's kind of good. It's kind of good to see that Linux is finally taken off and getting its just dues, and it's good stuff. Good stuff. Speaking of the UMPCs, one of the things that I was going to talk about last week, but we ran over time, was how I installed Slackware on my AAA PC. Would you guys like to hear the story? Of course you would.
Go for it.
I haven't actually written this down yet, but I plan on doing it. Basically, I wasn't interested in so much as wiping out the default install of Zandros on here. I just wanted to see if I can get Slackware running on this. Slackware is probably one of the best distributions that I've ever run. It still is my favorite.
What do you mean, one of the best?
It is the best.
Slackware
I'm sorry.
Is the best.
I'm sorry.
All right.
I need to apologize. I think I got a little brainwashed by Pat's review, which he could talk about later. I was Slimer. So I wanted to try it on here.
The pansy slacker review. Shame on you, Pat.
And it was fairly easy. It was fairly easy to get installed on here, and I'll explain how I did it. I wanted it on my flash card. I have a 4-gig flash card. I wanted to install it on there. I didn't want to replace the Xandros, and I didn't want to make the flash card bootable because, you know, it's a pain in the ass. I could have done it that way, but I didn't. So what I did was I had Puppy on one of my other flash cards, and I was running Puppy by just, you know, hitting up the Grub bootloader that's installed on the master boot record of the flash device on here already, and I would, from the command line, just point it to the flash card and launch Puppy. So I figured I could just do the same thing for Slackware. It shouldn't be that hard. Now, my first mistake that I made, which was kind of stupid, but I figured, well, in order, I need to get the operating system on, you need to get Slackware on here. The beauty of Slackware packages is they're essentially tarballs, right? So I figured, well, I'll just take them and I'll extract them onto the root of the flash card, the 4-gig flash card, which I reformatted to EXT2 partition. So it's file system on there. And I just dumped the Slackware packages into there and, you know, untarred them in there and figured that would be good enough to go away. Actually, it's not, because in addition to them being just tarballs, they do have some scripts in there that run some setup features, so that wasn't the right way to do it. So what I did instead is, the you know, another beauty of Slackware's package manager, when you install a package using inst package, install package, you can specify when you do that a root other than your main root. So what I did was I took this into my Slack machine that I already have made. I had all the packages that I wanted to install in there, basically from L and N, which is the applications 1 and 2. The A is the default applications that you need pretty much to run the system. AP is some extra applications that you probably do need some of those, like cups and stuff like that if you want to get printing. L is your libraries, and N is the networking stuff. So I installed from those series of packages. Basically what I did is I mounted the flash drive. I set that, the path to that, as the root path, but I passed to install package, and I just, you know, installed the packages that I wanted to put on there, and it just dropped them, unpackaged them right onto the flash card, set them up, the directory structure, everything. It worked perfectly. You know, everything was set up and good to go. I put my kernel on there and I was good to boot. Okay, so I had the entire OS on there that I wanted, the basic install of it, and I popped it into the flash reader on the EEPC, and I pointed Grub right there, you know, in the command line, and pointed it that was the root device. I, you know, booted the kernel and passed the root devices /dev/sda1, which is what it would be if it would boot. And then I attempted to boot it. Of course, it failed. It would start to boot the kernel, but it couldn't read the file system. So essentially, what it came down to was that it didn't have the drivers to read the flash card, to mount the flash device, the flash hard drive, as the root partition. So I had to essentially just go in and create an initrd image, an initializing RAM disk image, on my Slackware system. Now, the problem that I had with the basic initrd Slackware image is that it didn't contain the necessary modules that I needed to recognize the flash device. That was resolved quite easily, because if you read the README file under the Slackware initrd README file, it explains to you how you could just take any of the extra modules that you want. What it does is, when you install the initrd package for Slackware, it has a tree under your boot /initrd_tree. You just install the modules that you want into that tree where they would go. And when you run the make initrd, it packages all that stuff up and creates the initrd image. I slapped that onto the flash card, and pointed a grub to that initrd image, and voila, I'm running Slackware. It was that easy. It was beautiful. So once I had the basic Slackware system running, which only took me about 2 days to actually figure all that out, you know, because like I said, the first time I did this, I kind of screwed up and just untarred the packages instead of actually installing them onto the flash. But you know, once I had that up, I just needed to get the rest of the software on here that I wanted to run, my X server and stuff like that. Getting that was a bit of a pain in the ass from the perspective that it seems the way I do all my Slackware installs these days is the lazy way. I'm going to go with the minimum I need to do to get just the basic system installed. Therefore, I've never pulled down the DVD. I've only just pulled down the first disk and installed that on my main workstation, which is basically what I did on the EEPC. And anything else I use Slack package to get. So when I had the Tripoli PC up and running, to get the network to be able to be used was quite easy because it has a network card in there. Just mod probed it in there and connected it up to my my network over here through an Ethernet cable. Used Slack package to get some of the other packages I needed. And in conjunction with that, on my main workstation, which is running Slackware 12.1, some of the other software I needed, there was a couple packages out there for the driver for the wireless card. So I pulled that down off of the Tripoli PC forums. I got to get the Slackware, EEPC Slackware site. There's one out there that talks about how they installed it. But I'll get to that in just a minute. I pulled down their drivers. I installed those. I used SBO package, which is the Slackware builds package, which Tress Griffin has put together and maintains.
That is a good program.
It is. It's great. Pretty much anything I needed to compile myself, I just ran the SBO package and pulled it down, compiled it, and then I just dropped it on the Tripoli PC, and it was good to go. I used Wicked to enable and control the wireless. That's working really great. Pretty much the only thing I have not gotten working properly yet is the webcam. I'm still working on that. Slackware 12.1 on the Tripoli PC runs really good, runs really great. I was using Fluxbox on there because I love Fluxbox, and pretty much had it set up like I regularly do now. Far less system resources taken up. I had most of Slackware 12.1 installed, some extra packages, and I was just beginning to play around with it. Now, because it's running off the flash card, I did notice that some things were a little slow, like video playback and some flash was a little bit slower than it is when I'm normally running it off the main flash memory, or yeah, the flash hard drive in the system that Xandros is installed on. There's a little bit more pokiness, and I attribute that primarily to it being on the flash card and a slower access file system there. Slower access device. But it is very usable, runs great, it looks nice. It's just Slackware, it's slim. I disabled system logging, syslog, so it doesn't. I think that I've read that in other places that you should do it, so I just did it. Not under any direction, but just did it so that it wasn't writing constantly to the flash device, all the log files and everything. But it works great. It works really great. Now, I'm going to switch over here to my main Slack workstation so I can pull up that website that is devoted to Slackware, installing Slackware on the Tripoli PC. And I forget, it's called Slackee, S-L-A-C-K-E-E. It's a Slackee. It's an official...
Slackee?
Yeah, Slackee.strangled.net. And I'll post that into the IRC. That's a great resource if you want to install Slackware onto your Tripoli PC and replace the Xandros operating system. Like I said, my method was installing it onto the flash card. It talks about an easy way to get a bootable flash card, USB flash card, to be able to install it. You would create the bootable USB, you would put the Slackware 1 files on there from the ISO, and then you would boot off there and be able to perform the install onto the main hard drive or flash hard drive on the EEE PC, and therefore you would replace Andros. That's not what I wanted to do.
So are we going to see a website in the future, Dan, that's like a EEE Dan, where you can go and download like one giant tarball that you can untar onto your flash media card or something to get Slackware run on the EEE PC?
That's a possibility. I should probably do that, huh?
I think you should do it, man.
If
you've got the whole thing down, why can't you make a default install and, you know, stick a file or set a file somewhere for other people to enjoy? Because I'm betting that Slackware on the internal flash card would be a rocking thing machine, you know, just because Slackware is so light and fast.
That's something to do. I will see. I'm still working on it, though. I haven't gotten it down. You know, I haven't gotten everything working in 100%. I want to. I should try, but I should do that. I should do that.
Do it to myself. Create the Triple E Dan site.
That's right, man.
It just sounds like a porn site.
Somebody needs to register the website now. E-E-E-Dan.
E-Dan.
You know, speaking of Slackware, and we can get to Pat's review in a minute. We can slam his ass for that. I'm sure a couple of us have some bones to pick with you, Mr. Davila, and your Seuss-11 attitude over there. But, at work, we have received an extra monitor. The engineers finally got dual monitors, you know, two monitors we can use. We got a video card. It's a PCI video card. It's I think it's a GeForce 5200. It's kind of older. It's only 128 megs of RAM, so it's not the best thing in the world, but it'll do the dual display, and it works all right. We got these set up, and it was not as smooth as I would like it to have been, but it wasn't that difficult. You know, once I got it figured out, be able to do the NVIDIA drivers, the NVIDIA setup drivers, and the NVIDIA setup allow you to more easily get dual display or twin view going or mirrored display, however you want to do, or an extended display. It allows you to do that a little more easily, but it's still, I think X and Linux with X and dual display still has a long way to go when compared to OS X or Windows. And I don't mean to be too critical about the Linux side of things, because I think one of the big differences between OS X and Windows that Linux shares and X shares is that there's a lot more flexibility involved there. Like I know with OS X and getting dual displays working, you know, it was easy to plug something in and it works, but when it doesn't work, it's a very big pain in the ass under OS X, and it's a lot more difficult, I felt, to fix than on the Linux side of things, and it's not as flexible as Linux can be, as X can be, compared to Windows or OS X. It's like you're doing it their way or you're not going to do it. And I've always kind of felt that the dual display was still a little bit, how it works is still a little kludgy on all operating systems. It's not as smooth as I would like it to be. Nevertheless, I mean, I got this running, and then I did it on everybody else's computer that was running Ubuntu in our engineering department. But some of my thoughts on that were, one, the extended display is not something I was really keen on. I was running Compiz at the time, and Compiz doesn't really work too well on an extended display. I don't know if anybody's ever tried it. You're not going to get the cube running on that too well. And it consumes a lot more system resources. When I was doing the separate displays, like an individual display on each one, Compiz worked fairly well. I had two different cubes going. Some of the controls on the second screen didn't seem to work as well as they did with, you know, on the first screen. Like, I couldn't navigate the cube faces with the Control Alt and arrow keys like I usually like to do. It wouldn't spin the cube, but it would do that with the mouse. I can do it with the mouse scroll wheel. I don't know why. I noticed that, and it was probably due to the low amount of RAM on the video card, 128 megs, that any transition menu drop-down menus on Firefox or transitions were extremely slow. So I click on a menu drop-down, and I think the menu wasn't working, and about 3 seconds later it would actually pop open. So it was really annoying. So in order to be really, really, really usable as to, you know, and snappy, I had to shut off Compass Fusion, which was kind of unfortunate, but there went the 3D desktop on my separate monitor displays, which then said to me, I was like, well, you know, I really like Fluxbox, so why the hell am I still sticking with GNOME on my work desktop? You know, I'm not running Compass anymore, so... All right, so you know what I decided to do? I decided to give Window Maker a try again, because it's been a long time since I played with Window Maker. You guys have all tried Window Maker, right?
Not in a while, but yeah. It's
been a long time.
You know, I figured, yeah, I love Window Maker. I loved it, you know, and I just been a while since I ran it. So I fired up Window Maker. I set about getting some dock apps and configuring it. I had a ball doing it because I wasn't that busy at work this morning. So I had the opportunity to do that. I had a really cool, you know, different looking desktop than anybody else running Window Maker. I had my dock apps on there. One of the problems I had is I set up everything. I shut, you know, and I closed it down. I started back up. And for some reason, after I had everything set up, all my dock apps, the clip and everything, all of a sudden were like microscopic in size. And here's what I ultimately tracked down the problem. When I was doing the going through the Window Maker configuration tool, which is the standard one, not the WMaker.conf file, but the Window Maker preferences tool that comes with Window Maker, and checking things off, it set my icons to 24 by 24, and on my desktop, 24 by 24 was extremely small. So I had to bump them up to, I think it was 72 by 72, for them to look proper. And once I did that in there, my dock apps were back to, you know, normal. They looked perfectly. It was great. It was fun running it. It works great on the dual display. It's very snappy, very responsive. I had a ball, you know, and now I got my desktop changer working on that, and it updates all the desktops. It's just fun. It's a great, great window manager. Another snag I ran into is I fired up Amarok, and I couldn't control Amarok because Amarok, when it launches, puts itself minimized into the tray. So it becomes like a system tray application where you, if you want to get to the actual Amarok window, you double-click on the little wolf logo icon in the system tray. It pops up. Window Maker doesn't have a system tray or a panel. So I needed to get a panel, you know.
Because the guys from Window Maker know that you should just ditch Amarok and use XMMS instead.
I could do that, but I actually had everything set up to run in Amarok. It was a simple fix. I said, you know, there's panels out there. I got to be able to. I know Fluxbox has a panel. I could just run that. So I pulled down a couple of panels, PY panel, Fluxbox panel. I pulled down something called Matchbox panel. Matchbox panel, no good. It looked all right. It looked like it had a lot more flexibility than I wanted. Unfortunately, it did something and hogged the Window Maker configuration, messed up everything, ditched all my dock apps, and when I restarted Window Maker, everything was screwed up. I had to reset up all my preferences again. But I settled on PY panel. It was unobtrusive, small, very lightweight, and very easy to use, and was fully functional. Now, a lot of people are going to say, damn, what the hell? You know, you've been bitching for the past 6 months about big-ass analog clocks, and then what's the dock app that you turn around and install the first one? Well, I installed
big-ass analog clock.
I did WM Fish Time, right? Because I wanted fish on my desktop. I wanted a clock with fish in it, and of course, it's an analog clock. Okay, so WM Fish Time is an analog clock that's sitting there on the right-hand side in my dock, you know, off the dock. It's like a little dock app on the right-hand side. I got a nice, it's not a big-ass analog clock. It's a nice little medium-sized analog clock. And then I realized that, wait a second, PY panel gives me a digital clock in the lower right-hand corner of the screen. And I slapped my head and I said, holy shit, I just recreated the Vista desktop right there. I got the digital clock on the bottom lower right-hand side of the screen in the system tray, where we'll be in Windows. And then I got the analog clock on the right-hand side where Windows has that other tray that they got going on. And I got my dock apps. Their widgets are in there. I've recreated Arrow on using software that's probably more than 5 years old. So that's innovation for you on the Vista desktop.
We want screenshots, Dan.
I'll take a screenshot of it tomorrow at work. But, yeah, I realized that I created Vista desktop right there. And, wow, that's kind of scary. It must have been as a reaction to Pat's reviews. Pat, go ahead. Defend yourself, man.
I have nothing to defend, man. It is what it is. Slackware is a great server distro. Let's leave it at that.
I really like 12.1. I put it back on my old laptop, my Sony Vaio.
You like it better than Ubuntu?
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking of putting my desktop back to it. Because all the things that I left Slackware for in the first place are now working. Automatically mounting things, so I don't have to dick around with stuff. It's just because I've been getting lazy.
You like Lilo better than Grub?
I don't turn my machines off, so I really don't give a shit.
But you know what? Who the hell cares? Bootloader you use?
Dan is Mr. Grub Bootloader of the Gods.
Yeah, but
I love Grub.
But and in actually, reality, Lilo like, fancy, how often do you now. Actually spend in either one of them? You know what I mean?
I spend a lot of time the past couple of weeks in my bootloaders.
Well, I can understand in your particular situation. But normally, like, if you're running a Linux box, you see your bootloader, what, once a year? Who gives a shit, right?
No, I appreciate my bootloader. Thank you, sir. No, I understand what you're saying, Link. I understand what you're saying. I give props to my bootloader, but go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
Dan is the guy that's still compiling Linux kernels too. Probably.
I recently did a kernel compile on my laptop not that long ago.
Not me. I see. That's another thing that I just don't see any advantage in anymore. I don't see any advantage in not doing a complete install. I don't see any advantage in recompiling your kernel. Sorry, Gen 2 people, you're just crazy. And I don't see any advantage in pissing around with which bootloader you use either, because, like I said, who cares? You use it once a year and you're done, right? I mean, I may be crazy, but, that's just my opinion. Hard drive space is cheap now, and processor speed is cheap at this point in time. Everybody's got these gigantic, 3-point-something gigahertz machines. Who gives a shit, about recompiling your kernel anymore? It's going to run just fine with whatever the hell the default kernel is.
Load everything on it.
I just don't. Unless you're one of those guys who, some people really get a kick out of that kind of stuff. They really want to optimize and tune everything. And, if that's your particular hang up and you're really into that and you just love that GCC screensaver, have at it. You know what I mean?
Gentoo is for you.
Yeah, I don't begrudge you a thing to do that, but I just, personally, anymore, I'm happy with the default stuff, and it's a real testament to Linux to be able to say that, because I've been happy with the default stuff for quite a while. But I do remember, and I'm sure the rest of you guys on the conversation do too, I do remember back in the early days when you just couldn't do the default install necessarily and have your stuff work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's a real testament to Linux now that you can just about grab any old freaking computer anywhere and grab your whatever distro of choice CD you want and stick it on there, and 20 minutes works. Later, yeah, 20 minutes later, you're working with everything that you need, you know, including office utilities and X running and all that other stuff. You can't even do that with Windows now, you know?
Sure. The other thing I liked about it was ACP. Am I doing the numbers right there? The power management is actually
ACPI?
Working. Yeah, it's actually working now. I mean, my laptop is not like going to full fan mode as soon as it boots up.
Awesome.
I still don't get a whole lot of time out of it, but I think that's more operator error in setting it up on my part than it is anything else on it. But you know, it's enough that you know if the plug falls out of the wall, it doesn't immediately shut off, which was what it was doing back when I was in doing Slack 10 and stuff like that.
Could be just your battery shot.
Well, the battery is shot, but I know I should get more than about 10 minutes out of it. Because I would know when I had the Ubuntu distribution on it, I was able to get about 30 minutes out of the battery on it. So, you know, like I said, there's settings, and you know, by default it's off. It's off completely. So I may have not hit all the settings properly, but the fact that it works is good. And like I said, my laptop doesn't go into full fan mode, which is what it used to do. You know, as you know, when we were sitting in the room there, as soon as you plugged it in, you know, you booted it up, and my fan was on full the whole time. So, but I'm definitely thinking about when I get some extra time, I'm going to actually switch the desktop over to it again.
Well, Slack is nice. As a desktop, it's not for me.
Just
my opinion.
What is it that you didn't like about the desktop?
You know, it's a default KDE, which is fine, I guess. To me, it was more, you know, the whole package dependency thing. Yeah, you can go to a package, slackpackages.net. What is it, linuxpackages.net? I forget the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've grown lazy in my age, I guess.
Lazy man, you. We can get all the Slack builds and just install that way. Although I do miss dependencies. That's about the one thing I really do miss on it. But other than that, it's not really hard to find those.
Well, normally it tells you if you're missing something.
Yeah, yeah. When you start
it'll
it up
try
or
start something
even,
up and it'll say lib something something is missing and is required and you put that in. And it's a pain in the ass to do that. But it has its advantages, too, you know, in some instances.
Yeah. But it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd Dan go?
I'm right here.
I don't know. Dan ran away.
No, I'm right here. I was just getting a song for tonight. You know, that's a good point, though. I mean, I can see... on my main workstation where I just have a few applications that I want to run, Slackware fits the bill perfectly. Easy to install. If I was doing something like video processing, video editing, I think Slackware would be a little more of a challenge. Not to say I wouldn't do it necessarily, but a little more challenge compared to something like Ubuntu because, you know, or Debian. Because you're just an app get away for most of those applications.
Well, and I wouldn't compare it, you know, if you're talking video editing, I wouldn't go, you know, sticking Debian in there on that one. The advantage that you have with Ubuntu over, you know, with Ubuntu and Fedora and stuff like that over Slackware is that those distributions like Ubuntu and Fedora tend to be on the newer, if not bleeding edge, of the current Linux technology, the current FOSS programming technology, you know, as far as the drivers go and the new libraries and things like that, okay? And Slackware, as we all know, does not. Slackware is that rock-solid, stable system that uses,
that
you know, the absolutely the best libraries and software for stability that there are, you know, in the most vanilla configuration of them as well. And And that's, you know, one of Slackware's strengths. So, again, I think it really has to do with what sort of system you're looking for. You know, and I agree with you, Dan. If I was going to do video editing or something like that, and first thing I reach for is like a Fedora 9 or Ubuntu 8.04, because they would have the most up-to-date stuff, and they would be the easiest ones to get the most updated stuff for. Whereas Slackware, it would really be, you know, difficult at best. But I think the same of Debian as well, because Debian's big thing is they, you know, they have their big stable distribution, and they have testing and stuff like that, which is a lot more modern. But even their most modern implementation on Debian is not as bleeding edge as like Ubuntu or Fedora. I think someone's probably gonna, you know, say no, you're wrong, but that's my opinion.
You're wrong. You're always wrong, man. Yeah.
Usually, yeah.
Full of crap.
And it's not that I don't like Debian. I like Debian, you know. Debian's pretty cool.
Debian.
They're still, you know, they're still a little bit on the software Nazi side, guys. If you're listening, got to get that taken care of someday. But, you know, I like the distribution. That's great.
Yeah. What do you think, Pat? You calling bullshit?
About what?
Calling bullshit on what Link just said?
It's definitely a pain in the ass if you got to compile every single dependency from scratch. Like, I installed Cinelara on Hardy here, and I compiled it, and it was pretty easy. I got it going within, like, 10, 15 minutes. It'd take long to get it going. Even though they didn't have a package for it. You know, I could see that taking a little longer on say, Slackware.
Well, you know, you're looking at older libraries on Slackware.
I don't know.
It's hard to grab the current program, you know, the current open source program and stuff it on something that uses an older, more standard set of libraries and get it to run. It doesn't necessarily work that way. But if you're looking for a regular desktop that you know is going to be rock solid stable and it's just going to run, you couldn't do better than going with Slackware, you know.
Pat, out of those three distributions that you tried, Vista, Windows CE, and OS 10, Leopard, was it?
Vista, all the way.
That's you did.
You did Fedora 9, right? Slackware, yep. And OpenSUSE, is it 10?
No, it's the new one. What is it, 11 beta?
Oh, 11 beta.
You might as well tell everybody the secret, Pat. You know, that you're trying all these new distributions out, but what you're trying them out is under VMware, under Mac OS X.
No, I actually did it on a spare hard drive.
What? Which, it sounded, I got the impression that you seem to like SUSE out of the best out of all three of them. You seem to be,
I was very impressed by it, man, to be honest, with the direction they're going in. I installed the KDE 4 version. And it actually seemed that the KDE 4 that they shipped it with is actually going to be usable as an everyday desktop. To me, that was the most
impressive. As opposed to, like, what it was like on Fedora 9, you didn't... I mean, that's the same thing, right?
I don't know. The whole thing about Fedora was... It seemed as a lot of pieces are missing. It was lacking, like, polish. Just little things, you know? Like, the stupid system updater never really worked right.
Yeah, but what I didn't understand about your review is, it, you know, and specifically about the KDE thing, is you're mentioning how great KDE 4 was.
Well,
on SUSE, but
I've never been a huge fan
Fedora
of SUSE.
KDE is KDE no matter what distribution you put it on, you know? It's like saying, you know.
To be honest, SUSE has always been geared towards KDE. You know, I'm not a huge SUSE fan in general. You know, I'm not a big fan of RPM distros in general. This is my preference.
SUSE actually started out with...
way back in the day, they were based on Slack.
Yeah, they were...
I'm going to give it a good review when it comes out final. It's supposedly within a month or so.
How do you know you're going to give it a review? What if they screw it up?
What's that?
Doesn't matter. He's going to give it a good review anyway, damn it.
They've already paid for that review. And
exactly.
I'm
on the payroll here. Have you guys installed Mono yet, Silverlight?
Hell no.
Come on, get with the program.
I got rid of all my Mono stuff. There's no Mono here.
No, I'm just going straight for .NET.
All I have to say about the whole Mono and Silverlight is why?
Have you tried
why,
it?
Why? No.
Oh.
I have no interest.
You know, speaking of Mono, Miguel is getting a lot of bad press lately. Have you guys been reading about that?
I thought he's been getting bad press for the past year, hasn't he?
Yeah. But I keep seeing it. Like, every time I see Miguel's name anywhere in my RSS feed, that somebody's giving him shit about, you know,
yeah,
his current views on things.
Yeah,
Miguel.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't necessarily agree with him either, but, you know, the guy's done a lot to help.
He's a bright guy, don't get me wrong.
Help open source along.
No,
I don't see the whole point of it.
I think he's a bright guy, too. I think he's, you know, he's done a hell of a lot. I just, you know, I'm not too keen on the Mono project. That's what he wants to spend his time doing.
He's in love with it. That's like his thing, you know?
I mean,
that's
more
thing,
power to him. And I, you know what? I really do hope that in the long run that there is not any submarine patents or patent encumbrances involved with the Mono project, that things are going to turn out and work out just fine. Because, you know, it would be great if that's the case. But
it's like it's headed that way.
Yeah, it's like keeping tigers, you know? It's like keeping a tiger. Sure, it might make a good pet, and you might be able to play with it, but there's a very good likelihood that one day down the line, one of these guys is going to bite your ass, you know? You're playing with fire. I mean, why choose a tiger as a pet when you can have a, I don't know,
a chinchilla.
Yeah, a chinchilla. I don't know. A penguin. Well, a penguin would probably bite you, too. But it probably wouldn't kill you. Yeah, a chihuahua.
A chihuahua.
Taco
Bell dog.
Yeah. But it just seems a little risky. There's just, you know, there's a lot of people that are saying, you know, it keeps on going back and forth. You know, here Microsoft is extending the olive branch over here. They're putting ODF in Office. They're making Office OpenXML a standard. You know, they're reaching out to open source projects. But, you know, it's hard to want a, you know, it's hard to trust a company that has been so untrustworthy in the past. It's hard. Yeah,
Microsoft might be extending the olive branch. However, a lot of us are leery as to what the olive branch is actually made out of.
Yeah, what's on the other side of that branch? You know, what's the right hand ready to do that? The left hand, you know, that's extending the handshake to you. You know, what's that right hand going to do?
The pickaxe.
And I realize it's a huge company.
That's no way to pick your friends.
Yeah, it's a huge company, but is it that huge that, you know, the one side of the company doesn't know what the other side is doing? I mean, how could they be extending the olive branch on one hand and have the CEO of the company and the former CEO of the company both stating that, you know, this olive branch they're extending it to is towards technology that's infringing on their IP and that you should never use it and it's full of, you know, it's inferior technology and is, you know, the bane of all existence.
Because the power of Balmer compels them.
I'm sure it does. But, you know, if the power of Balmer compels them, how can we trust that olive branch? I mean, it's a mess, you know? It's just a mess. I don't know.
Interesting things, though.
It's like Microsoft tried to, like, hijack Java. You know, they were taken to court over it. They lost the case. So what do? They come out with their own version and call it C#.
Yep. Right?
In the key of
They're doing it to Flash with Silverlight. They're trying to kill PDF with XPS, XML paper specification. They're ramrodding over... they've always ramrodded over, web standards, so... Where do you travel? When do you say no? And how can you trust a company that has done nothing but attempt to subjugate, subvert, and, embrace and extend every other technology out there? I tell you how. First, you start by writing great reviews about OpenSUSE. Then you move on to Mono and Silverlight Technologies. And then next thing you know, Pat's going to be saying, I'll tell you what. I am running CoWeaver's Wine so I can get my favorite email application, Outlook, running properly. And then next thing you know, he's running Windows in a VMware or VirtualBox session. Then he's dual booting. Then he's running Linux inside a VirtualBox or VMware session inside of Windows. Then he's just on Vista. And he's sitting there at this place of work convincing everybody that he convinced to move to Ubuntu or Linux back to Windows. Isn't that
It seems more and more people, are coming over to Ubuntu at work. A lot of my coworkers, man, they're asking me about it. I'm helping them set stuff up. And
same thing at my work, isn't it? That's really cool,
I really think Vista's been one of the best things for Linux to come along. It really has pushed things along, and it's forcing the issue of people looking at other options.
Now, are these people that are just like walking up and talking to you because they know you're a Linux guy, or are
they know I'm a Linux guy
actively soliciting?
No, I'm not actively soliciting, but the words gets around. This person doesn't know about Linux.
That's that's the thing. That's it's the same with
that's
me.
Standing
it's
on the corner.
That's the most notable thing is.
Showing a little
it's people that are actively coming up and seeking me to tell me that they're, trying to learn more about Linux or trying to make a transition to Linux, as opposed to me trying to go out and and solicit people to do that. That's what I've noticed. It's been a sort of a change in venue. That's sort of interesting.
Excuse me.
It seems a lot more lately.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of unfortunate where I work that the majority of people are running some form of Linux somewhere. What was really neat to see...
You're lucky.
Yeah, is we just got a new engineer about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. And, I popped over the cubicle the day after, her first day. And, I think she's like 24 years old. And she
How are you?
Yeah.
And Dan says, hey, baby,
you want to get some coffee?
You want to see something? I can pick my nose with my tongue.
She just looked. She's sitting in front of her computer, and the company gives you a computer with Windows XP installed on it, and she just looked so distraught. And I was like, I'm like, so how you doing over there?
Fix that.
And she just looked so. I said, what environment are you used to working in? And she's like, well, I'm used to running Ubuntu. So I was like, okay, man, that's it. I gave her to Ubuntu disk and said, get that shit off of there,
Yeah.
So here's this person.
Yo,
just
baby,
started
would you like to see my disk?
She's run. She's a software engineer, prefers Ubuntu, and that is awesome.
Awesome.
Good.
That's great, man.
That's awesome.
The guy that just started a couple weeks ago. He was like all he ever ran was Windows. All he ever ran with Windows. He sat through one of my presentations on the Linux boot process. He saw me running Linux. He's like, this is a guy I've talked about before. He's like, I want to install it. He installed it. And this is the guy that I said just went apeshit and wanted to run everything from the command line. He installed it on his computers at home. I mean, he loves it. It's great. It's great to see that. It's just such now the other guy, the other new guy
it's
that just came
to
on,
see
yeah.
That kind of stuff, especially if you're not actively like seeking it out, and
yeah, the other
it's nice to run into people who are making a discovery on their own.
That's true. The other engineer that's there, the final guy, the other new guy. He like popped his head. He's like, I'm getting a new computer today. He's like, what do I need to do to get Ubuntu on here? Can I just reinstall, resize the partition and we can inside? I'm like, yeah, we'll do that, man. As soon as you get that new computer, whenever you're ready, we'll just get Ubuntu on there. You could be running that. And he seems pretty gung ho to do that. So it's great, it's awesome to see that just about everybody, every engineer except for one person, it will be running Linux. Good stuff.
Thank you, Microsoft.
So Dan, what do you got for music?
Thank you for unleashing your shitty version of your operating system yet.
We're going to get an email now saying, come on, you guys are being really harsh on Microsoft.
You're being hard on Microsoft. Vista runs great in my house. Those are the emails that we get every time after a show. You're picking on Vista. Vista runs great over here. Everybody runs Vista. No, they don't. And anybody that thinks that is full of shit,
see, that's what I wonder. You always see, like, when you read an article that's against Vista or talks about spyware or anything like that, there's always one or two posts in there that there's that guy that's running Windows since Windows 3.1 that has never had any antivirus or spyware problems. And then there's the other guy that says, well, it's because of Windows popularity that they have all these issues. Should Linux ever, acquire that level of popularity, it's going to be just as riddled with spyware and viruses as Windows would be. Same with OS X.
Yeah, we've gotten those emails before, too, and those people are full of shit, too.
And
Adobe? Once we get Adobe running, all those apps from Adobe, I don't know.
We'll have to see.
What, yeah, you think Adobe's going to open the door to viruses and spyware?
I don't know. It seems there's a lot of security issues with Adobe stuff.
But those security issues with Adobe stuff, do they cause root exploits? Do they cause exploits to hijack your system?
Anything causes a root exploit on Windows. The browser causes a root exploit on Windows. You know what I mean? Well, actually, no. Let me rephrase that. It does not cause, nothing causes an exploit on Windows until they tell you that there was an exploit. And they will not tell you that until they have a patch for it. So, therefore, there is no exploits, or there are no exploits on Windows.
Well, I'm glad you finally realized.
Definitively. But for those people who think Vista, runs great and nobody has a problem running Vista. I don't know about the rest of you guys, but like I deal with 15,000 users, and there are very few of them that run Vista. Very, very few.
This Vista really is pushing people over to other OSs, Linux, OS X, BSD, whatever. It's the truth, man. It's really helping.
Yeah, I think a large part of it was that people just can't afford to keep up with the hardware requirements.
Exactly. What are the responses I get? The guys who tried Linux for the first time, they're like, "It's so fast compared to Windows."
Yeah, They're
Windows XP.
Yeah. They'll tell you it's blazingly fast, and they're running a fat distribution, like they'll be running Ubuntu or something like that. Oh, it's so much faster, And then you tell them, imagine what it'd be like if you upgraded from 512 megs RAM to a gig of RAM.
Woo. 1 gig to 2 gig.
Yeah.
Get a freedom-hating NVIDIA graphics card.
Mm-hmm.
Well, gentlemen, I think it's about time we wrapped it up.
It is.
Yeah.
Got to shut down the stick cam because Bookaroo's over there, and he's just like, he's content. He must be looking at his monitor right now and looking at either Alan or myself and saying, those tech show guys,
damn,
they're sexy.
Sweet little thing.
Gonna come back here next Wednesday.
Yeah. Awesome. Either that or...
And do feel free if we have this up again to, like, pop in if anybody's got a webcam.
Oh, he just clicked off. He must have heard what we were saying.
we scared him off. All right.
He's like, oh, shit. They see me. All right.
Oh, before we go, what quick question for Link?
All right, that's it, everybody. Have a good one. I'm sorry.
Oh, if you want, we can put it on the end.
No, go ahead.
Like, do you use Cisco VPN, right?
Yes.
Are you able to connect with a dynamic IP address?
Yes.
For some reason, I am not able to connect with a dynamic IP address on my home network. I'm thinking that maybe it's my router.
You can't connect from your home network to?
Yeah, if I have it set up as a dynamic IP. If I'm set up as static IP, no problems. It works fine.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with it. You know, no matter what I run it on, I don't have any problems with it.
Weird.
And I haven't done it. It's not like there's any real configuration or anything like that of the, you know, of the client. You basically get the client and you build it and you put your freaking username.
What happens?
It just works.
When I'm with a dynamic IP, it'll try to go out and connect and it'll just tang and eventually it'll come back saying unable to connect. But when
you don't
I have
think
a dynamic,
it's maybe something on your company's end that's.
You think it might be the VPN router possibly with configuration?
Yeah, I don't think it's anything to do with your configuration on your end because there's nothing to the client. You know what I mean?
Well, I posted a message in the Ubuntu forum. See if anybody responds. I'll put something in maybe Linux questions. See if anybody has similar experiences.
Yeah, nothing over here, man. It works perfectly over here.
Well, that's all I have for tonight, man.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody, and watching
yes,
those
indeed.
Who did.
Thank you for listening to us again on this show number, what the hell show is it? 246, right?
That high? I don't know. I don't usually know until
shows.
I put the show up which show it's at.
246. At least it better be, because that's the one that I'm adding into this stuff right now. So,
oh, good. That lets me know that I got to name it 246, and not
yep,
go off oh, crap. Now I got to change everything.
Show up.
Yeah. All right. So tonight we have a song called Hikari. Japanese version, it's an acoustic song from Kingdom Hearts, but it was up on Podsafe Audio. So hopefully you'll enjoy it. Gentlemen, any last words before I play the song?
Nope.
Thanks for listening.
That's it for me. Good night, everybody.
Happy days.
Good night.
Have a good one.
Happy days.
Hi, this is Pat from the Linux Link. Thank you.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
It's over.
It's it. It's time for me to turn off my sticky cam.
Hey, do you got the power over there to boot everybody out of this room, Dan?
I don't know why.
Well, just so it'd kick everybody out, because I think the room will stay open, even though...
It stays open for an hour after I leave.
After you leave, or after...
No, after I leave.
Leaves?
After I leave.
Okay. Cool, then.
I can see that we're already getting spam bots in there.
Yeah, seems to be.
A triple X.
Spooky.
Yeah, so I'm actually closing out of it now.
Yeah, me too. All right.
Didn't take long.
No, not at all. Pretty tricky, sneaky. Shish. All right. Whew. Did Link just blow out of here already?
I think so, yeah.
Bastard. I'm just running out of here. Running out of here. No more love.
No more loving.
All right, gentlemen, I will talk to you on the interwebs.
Have a good night, man.
Hey, right. Have a good one. Good night.
Have a happy. And good night to everybody else.